frisch, 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 frisch.
I'm going fishing, hook, sinker, and line.
Well, as you can tell from the coughing in the background, the hacking, the wheezing, all the rest of the stuff, yeah, I got big fish things going on. I got to tell you, every time I turn around, the world's ending, and as far as I know, the fishing's like every other August we've ever had. Is it great? Not so much. Is it good? Yeah, absolutely. Fish and Frank here in the chair, telling the truth to the fishing community. We didn't die. We lived through it. Everything's all good. I got Robert here in the chair across from me to prove that I'm still alive.
Yeah.
I mean, boom, boom. See that? That's a heartbeat. Can you hear that?
Well, that's a pretty slow heartbeat.
Yeah, well, let's face it. And RJ's leaving the room. Even he's afraid to hang out near today.
Right?
Anyway, life, death, people, fish. I mean, we've all heard all about this stuff, and this is only going to be about a minute, but, you know.
Is that a New York minute or your minute?
Well, cowboy time.
Okay.
I actually worked as a cowboy one time, and I actually liked it, except where you got to sleep. When you go off, you get on the horse, well, or truck or horse. I actually got to do both, but, you know, it's when you get to the wagon you sleep in. And it's kind of just a four-wheel wagon and everything. And the easiest way to tell that's where the bunkhouse is when you get downwind of it. And you get closer, it gets worse. And then you say, man, sleeping outside sounds awesome.
Yeah.
So, anyway, but enough of the cowboy stuff. You know, we've had this bad red tides coming around, and everybody thinks that it's everywhere, all-inclusive. Everybody and everything in Florida died.
Yeah.
You know, there's no doubt about it. You know, there's no way any of us could have survived this. But we did. And as far as I'm hearing, it's breaking up along the beaches.
Yeah, absolutely. I think definitely this east-southeast wind has helped push some of it out and even break it apart. But I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that it's also possible that it's just kind of hit a little lull in its cycle and is kind of starting to die off a little bit.
Well, red tide's like any other plant. Once it blooms or flowers or fruits or do whatever a plant's going to do, it goes into kind of a quiet time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if it uses up all of its nutrients around it too, it's got no choice but to shut down.
Right. So it just might be hitting the end of its life cycle at this point. But we're hearing stories about bait along the beaches, snook moving back into Stump Pass Marina. If you haven't been out to Stump Pass Marina, go check it out. What you do is you go out to Englewood. It's off old 775, I think, off there. And you take 771, it turns into 775. It kind of makes a big loop around from the corner with the gas station with all the pizza and food on it, the Pick and Run there. Turn left. And you go down, you go all the way around, you go in and Stump Pass Marina. You go in there and buy a dozen shrimp or a little bit of squid or something. It really doesn't matter. Some kind of bait. Just buy a little bit, whatever the least amount they'll sell you. And then you just throw it in the water. And you watch the water explode with all these amazing fish.
Yeah, and they're pretty impressive size, too.
There's these big snook, there's catfish, there's tarpon. You know, people drive all the way down the Keys to do this kind of stuff. And we have it right here in Englewood at Stump Pass Marina. You can go right there and experience all that cool stuff that people go all the way down to the Keys for.
Yeah.
But here's the weird part. There's fish back there already. Now, according to everything I've read on social media, which I admit is limited, I just quit doing social media, but I did go back on and look, and everything, you know, the world ended, you know, no one will survive, but there's snook back there again.
Yeah.
And there's fish there you can go out and feed, and it's absolutely awesome. I know several of the people that work at Stump Pass, they have a bait and tackle shop there, and they're just generally nice people.
And they have the world's best smoked wings.
Really?
At the Lighthouse Grill, right there at the marina.
Oh, they got smoked wings?
They don't fry them, they smoke them.
Really?
And they are juicy and wonderful. That's a little plug because it's one of my favorite restaurants.
Well, we got to go. I haven't had smoked wings in forever. So, yeah, we got to figure out time to get out there and go do that. And nice folks. But the reason we're bringing this up, not only the nice people and the really cruel touristy thing to do, and when people say touristy, it's like it's a dirty word. It's not. The reason tourists want to do it is it's fun.
Yep.
That's the whole thing. You're sitting there and you're around there. And when I go to the Keys, I ride the conch train. I go to the museums. I do that all over the place because it's cool. You know, I can sit in a dark room and drink alcohol anywhere. We do that later. But during the day.
We're doing that now.
Yeah, well, you know, I didn't want people to know, you know, okay. But the snook are back in there. Now, Robert said the snook move back in there, right? That's what you were saying.
Yep, that was the words I used.
We're coming up in the truck from Fish and Frank's, and he says the snook move back in. Now, RJ, my thoughts on this were the snook, I don't know if they move back in. Are fish smart enough to leave an area with red tide? Or did they just go lay on the bottom and hope for the best?
My first guess is they go deep. Because from what I've read, snook are territorial. They stay in a certain area. And it would make sense to me that the red tide toxins are in that top layer of water that's not very thick. And things that go up in and out of that are going to pick up the toxins.
Yeah, usually in a quieter area like Stump Bass, I would say the first 2 foot of water would be pretty bad, and going down to about 3 or 4 feet with pretty decent concentrations.
Yeah, I think it just depends on the bloom itself. I mean, those blooms have been known to go down 20, 30 feet deep.
Yeah, but in a quiet area like that, most of the time when I hear about blooms going down 20, 30 feet, it's from wave activity. If things are pretty calm, it doesn't seem like it goes that deep. As soon as it gets rough, then the current from the waves and the sloshing seem to really drag it down deep.
And but, Stump Pass is a very sheltered area. You almost never see waves in that particular
area. Yeah, and
area.
I can buy that.
You know, to me, that's all. The only time I ever see it when it goes deep is when you have winds. A lot of wind creates waves, which creates, you know, all the action in the water, all that. So, anyway. So I've been contending. Robert's saying they move back in. Now, the whole thing about this, Robert could be absolutely correct. The thing is, no one really knows if when it becomes hard to breathe, will the fish leave an area and just go away and then maybe come back when it's better? Or in the case of Stump Pass, because there's some pretty deep parts to that marina, I would say there's areas in there, they're at least 10 foot or more deep. And they could theoretically go down, lay on the bottom, and just hang out until the red tide goes away.
Yeah. No, it definitely makes perfect sense and gets you to think about it just a little bit differently.
Well, that's my job in the world, thinking differently.
Uh-huh. Oh, yes, you're very good at that.
Yeah. You know,
I'm thinking, too, we talk about temperature, how temperature affects where the fish are, oxygen affects where the fish are. So I'm thinking as those things change, The fish that we have today have learned how to survive all of that through the generations, and so they move. Now, where do they move? Did they go far? I don't think so. I think they go deep. That would be my guess.
So, and it's possible that happened. Or it could be, as you said. Now, you just said, and I'm going to go along with it, fish move because of oxygen.
Water temperature and oxygen.
Water temperature and oxygen levels. So there's a support of your case, Robert.
Yeah.
They move with, you know, lower oxygen levels, harder to breathe. They might just say, okay, I've had enough of here. I'm going to go out somewhere else. In their case, though, did they go from someplace bad to someplace worse? They jump out of the frying pan, get right into the fire.
Right.
You know, it's so anyway, just something weird to think about. But there are fish coming back in, and this didn't end fishing in Florida. This just interrupted it. Yeah. But up in the upper harbor, we've got a lot of fish up there right now. Still seeing schools of black drum. Now, I am hearing stories of dead fish in the harbor, and I will guarantee you one thing. They did not die there. They drifted in there.
Yeah.
Things tend to come in with the tides. Even though the tide comes in and the tide goes out, for some reason or other, more things seem to come into shore than away from shore. I don't know why that is.
Yeah, I don't know.
I know, no idea, but I'll...
The last several days have been a really strong incoming tides. I mean, we went from a 2.2 to a minus 0.1 yesterday in, I think it was 6 hours or 5 hours.
Now, that's on the outgoing.
Yeah.
So...
But it still went from that 1.1 to a 2.2.
Right, got the incoming. Yeah, I don't know exactly how it works either, but I do know those fish that they're seeing are over by Burnt Store or up around Cape Hayes and some of the areas in the harbor, they died out by Boca and were brought in one way or another. But they did not die in the harbor. The only thing that would be killing fish in the upper harbor right now is if we get a calm spell. When we have an hour or two of no wind, wind is critical for oxygen in the shallow flats of Shaw Harbor this time of year because we've got a lot of extra algae and stuff in the water, and it's decaying. It uses a tremendous extra amount of oxygen. We've got very warm temperatures. The water won't hold oxygen well at all. It's probably running less than half of the oxygen content that it does in the winter. So if we get a couple hours of no wind, you can have actual points where for 3 minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, there's no oxygen in that water. And it's a big killer of fish in this area. I would say as bad or worse than red tides on most years, because nothing can hold its breath. Normal fish, you got 3 minutes or so, maybe five. And after that, it's just done.
Yeah.
Just the way we are, if we don't get oxygen for 3 to 5 minutes, I'm probably in the minute and a half area. But, you know, it's one of those things. Low oxygen levels or zero oxygen kills a lot of fish here in the summer. It's one of the reasons I've been really a proponent of getting out and getting backhoes and barges in a lot of these creeks, digging them down to about 8 feet. Now, the trick is not to do that all the way. You dig a wide, deep area out, then you leave a shallow area, something that's like a 2 foot, foot and a half, 2 foot, where the fish can get up on that, be warm in that shallow water, and then drop down in the deep water to avoid bad oxygen days, freezing temperature days, all this stuff. But you got to be down at least 8 feet down there to really be well protected. 6 will do it on the most cases, but 8's a really wonderful number. If we could dig these out, you know, where it's 2 foot, 3 foot, 8 foot, 3 foot, 2 foot, you know, 3 foot, 8 foot, and just step these creeks all into different depths, we'd have 30-40% more fish within 2 years. You could easily raise the number of fish in Charlotte Harbor up 30-40%. But then again, that's a frankism. May not be a truism, but I believe it's true. So anyway, what's going on fishing-wise? Let's pick redfish. I picked the fish. You picked the spot, Robert. What's up, redfish?
The east side and the west side are really starting to pick up with them right now. You know, the west wall's got quite a few. I wouldn't say quite a few because some people associate that with 40, 50 fish days. But for your, as far as August is concerned, I'd say it's a pretty much normal, right on the money August fishing conditions with the redfish. You move around a lot, look for shade, look for moving water. That's real vital right now. And
well, moving water is like standing in a breeze.
Mm-hmm.
We always talk about moving water, but think of the difference between standing in a garage where the wind is or the air is still and it's hot, it's hard to breathe. And then you step outside around the corner, you get in a breeze, and the world is better. And it's the same thing for moving water at this time of year. It's all about, man, that feels so good. Okay, let's go get something to eat.
Right, exactly. So having that shade and the moving water are real key.
I'm glad I got you excited, Robert. You know, did you notice that sheer nothing? Okay, well, no, go ahead.
What I do. You know, the fish are hanging out in all those key points and they're waiting for food to come to them. They're not super aggressive. You know, it is hot outside. None of us want to run across the street for a hot piece of pizza, but we'd walk right next door for an ice cream cone. So these fish are kind of doing the same thing.
Oh, he's getting into like the Frank explanations.
You probably taught me that.
That one was good. You don't want to walk across. You're not going to run across the street for a hot piece of pizza. Although, I don't know.
No, you won't.
You won't.
I would run
you
across the street to save my
slowly
life.
Slowly stroll over there, but you darn sure aren't going to run over there.
I'm more of a meander guy myself.
Right.
I like to meander. All right.
So, using frozen baits right now, cut baits like cut sardines, cut ladyfish, blue crabs are working extremely well, and frozen shrimp if you can find them, or live shrimp. But you want to slow your presentation down. You know, I'm telling people when they're working those shorelines, cast your bait up into that spot, let it sit for a minute to 2 minutes, and then slowly work it back out to you, and then cast it back into that exact same spot and let it sit for another minute or two. Sometimes those fish are 10, 20 feet up inside the bushes or up into the mouth of that creek.
It takes them a while to come out. With the winds we've had a little while, for the last little while,
yeah.
I was talking to three different captains, and they said, you're looking for a big cut in the mangroves where the water goes way in, you know, you got the branches on both sides, and you're trying to get back in there as far as you can, not because you think the fish are going to be in that cut, but at least to get you back, because the fish were literally 20 feet back up into the trees because the water was so high. And they were back in all these areas where, you know, they can't get to on normal times.
Right.
And so that's pegging the nail right on the head, as far underneath the mangroves as you can get, and let it sit. Because as soon as you move it around, it might take them an extra 3 or 4 or 5 minutes to go that extra foot.
Absolutely. The water's dark. The visibility's terrible. So they're relying more on their sense of smell than anything else. So it takes them a little bit to meander through that root system and through that little creek or deeper water that they're in to try to narrow in on it. If you only let it sit there for a minute and then pull it out and then cast 10 feet up ahead of you to the next spot, that fish might have just been coming out from way up underneath there to where you originally had it. So always cast back to that same spot at least once and give it another couple few minutes
and
before you move on.
Okay, one of the things about this, and RJ, you're the, you know, big guy here at the radio station. Can I say that on the air? I don't think so.
Oh, hell yeah. Go ahead.
I can say two tits on the air.
You can say two tits on the air.
Okay. It's the name of a place. It's not a matter of things. One of the most beloved fishing spots on the east side of the harbor. It has a long and varied history of names and stuff. But anybody who came in the last 5 or 10 years knows it by that name. And it originally was Carmen Key, mispronounced to Cormorant Key or misinterpreted. And then it was Bird Poop Key. I won't go with the S word there. And what happened when it was Bird Poop Key is it was a big island, not huge, but let's say about 100 yards long, 30 feet wide. And what it was just a series of mangrove trees all the way out on the open flat. All of the rest of the islands are all kind of in a line. And then here's this one that stuck way out. And it was like a finger pointing out at the harbor. And all the boats ran between that and the main grouping of islands. That's where the deep water was. But this became one of the best fishing grounds around, because on the north side you had kind of a deep pocket and then a whole bunch of little, almost like craters. They dimpled up and down, you know, kind of like an egg carton. On the south side of it, you had a little bit of a beach area there. It came down in and then kind of rippled with different, small things under the water where you had little deeper areas. But the
kind of
south
more of a
side,
washboard bottom over there on that side.
Okay, I'll go a washboard. The north side was all about redfish. Yeah. South side was all about snook. The west side, you go, I'd say about 75 feet off it. Again, that washboard pothole bottom, pothole is what I was looking for. And tons of redfish. But what made this into some of the most spectacular fishing was the amount of pelicans and egrets and everything else that used to nest on that island. There was so many of them, the top of the trees turned white. And I'll let you guess why that was. And in the middle, where the main nesting grounds were, some of the trees started to die off. Well, the full vibrant ones on each side created two large mounds. And as you were driving up from the north or driving up from the south, and you look ahead of you, there was a beautiful form. And, I mean, you can take that all the way back to Leonardo or the Greeks. They did statues of these, okay? But they were beautiful. They were right there. And hence, that's where the name came from, because there was two of them, and that's what they look like, you know, a beautiful woman laying her back on the beach, you know? So,
yeah.
But Hurricane Charley came along and sucker punched the island.
Yeah, it definitely destroyed it pretty good.
I mean, it just shredded it. We lost Crabtrap Island. We lost Little Crabtrap Island.
We lost a lot of islands, period.
And
that one,
but those two were just astronomical fishing, though. If you wanted to catch that 30-snook in a trip, you could go there and a lot of times do it. And it was the same thing for, I'm on radio, and I don't know why. I have a hard time saying it. Okay, Two-Tits, when you would go there, that's, I mean, you could expect those kind of days a lot of time during the year, especially the fall and very early spring. A lot of fish there.
It's just a very, very consistent go-to spot.
Even with hundreds of boats stopping at it all the time, the fish just, they were there. So we're actually kind of saying goodbye to that place, because when Hurricane Charley, it destroyed the trees. There's been a couple left. And ever since then, every year, one or two more of the mangrove trees have died off, fallen in the water, and we hear it's about a root ball.
Yeah.
There's not much left. There's like one trunk left. And
the last two sticks basically broke off that were probably about 8 or 10 foot tall.
Yeah, absolutely amazing. I mean, it really makes me sad. I hate to say it, but I mean, I get a little choked up, but I think this one's gone. And we wanted to go out and put planking around the outside of the island, toss a little dirt up there, kind of make a mini seawall, plant some mangroves in there, and we found out we'd get arrested.
Yeah.
So, you know, so it's really sad. We really wanted to save that area. And if you look on fishandfranks.com on the east side one, I've got it on there as Carmoran, Comoran, BSK, Two-Tits, the whole bit. I mean, it's right there. I got some pictures of it. The sad part about it is I've been digging through all my old pictures trying to find a old picture of it when it was in its glory, when it was really that, you know? And right. I can't find one. I've got pictures after the hurricane, after it was destroyed.
You lost a lot of your pictures in the hurricane, though.
Yeah, I mean,
that's
what I hate about digital stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Digital pictures are horrible. Anything goes wrong, you can never get them back. A Polaroid picture, we learned through Charley. If you take a Polaroid of something, it takes, well, Charley was an act of God, and it didn't even destroy him.
Nope.
Most of the Polaroids lived. Regular pictures, digital pictures. I mean, water gunk and everything gets in those drives and the disc, and they're shot. A good old Polaroid picture is the best way to preserve history. There is, period.
Well, let me do a quick shout-out then. If anybody out there has got pictures of the island, you know, you fishing on the island, pictures of the island, so contact us here at the radio station, info@kdwradio.com, and tell us about it, and maybe we'll work something out with you.
Yeah, or Frank@fishandfranks.com.
Or Frank@fishandfranks.com, right?
So, anyway, just going, that's a sad bit of history that's about gone.
Well, and here's the cautionary part. When you're running out there on the east wall, you used to have something that was a visual to look out for. And with these higher tides right now.
Oh, that's
going to
make a nice jump.
Oh, yes. 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 So there is a little bit of a hazard there. If you're not really familiar with that area, you got to be super careful, because there is basically just the root ball is the only thing left sticking out of the ground there.
Dipping back in, how's stuff down by Sanibel, Pine Island?
Basically, from Jug Creek Shoals all the way down to Sanibel and even south of Sanibel, there is red tide scattered throughout there, and some of it's in pretty heavy concentrations.
Now, I'm going to say that red tide could be fueled by the Coosatchee.
I'm just over it altogether, of whatever the theory is. Either way, it still sucks.
Yeah, but I'm just saying that is one where if somebody wants to go, oh, the Clusace's causing this, I'm not going to argue that. I will argue the Clusace had nothing to do with the rest of those red tights. I'll argue that all day. And I'll win because I'm right, you're wrong. All right, Spanish mackerel. What's going on with the Spanish mackerel?
Just before we came here, actually, I got a couple reports.
You were catching Spanish mackerel?
No.
You were wanting to catch Spanish mackerel?
No.
You had reports of people catching Spanish mackerel?
Yes.
All right. Sorry.
I know. The middle of my sentence interrupted the beginning of yours, but we'll go on.
He's kidding. We're in the truck, and he's, like, witty and stuff today. I don't know what's happening.
Did we teach him this over the last several shows, and this is how you react?
I think it's your influence.
Could be.
It must be. It's not mine.
Couldn't be, yeah.
So the Spanish mackerel were in the pass yesterday, you know, in Boca Grand Pass. One of our customers out there looking for tarpon and went through the pass and saw some glass minnows and some Spanish mackerel. And then another customer was talking about how he got into the Spanish mackerel a little bit out there yesterday late in the afternoon with that strong outgoing tide. And then I've heard miscellaneous reports about basically the red tide is pretty much all but broken up from Lemon Bay all the way through Boca Grande. So they're seeing more bait fish along the beaches and on the backside along the intercoastal. So that's probably going to bring those in. And it's also going to bring more life into the harbor, so we should maybe even see some more Spanish mackerel moving into the harbor because that invisible fence was out there last week with the red tide basically blocking anything from coming or going. Gates opened up. Stuff's going to want to come in and go out.
Now, there goes along, RJ, with what we were talking about earlier. The red tide will actually act as a barrier keeping fish from entering shallow harbor or leaving. So you think that's an argument for Robert's point about fish moving when the red tide hits?
I agree. I think so. That leads to that argument. But it also may be the type of fish. Like Spanish mackerel don't sit down in a hole somewhere. They're moving all the time. Where, you know, a snook will sit still for a really long period of time waiting to ambush something. So I think both of the arguments hold water.
I like that.
See, there's a reason we keep him around. It's not just because, you know, he looks good in that tutu he wears, but, you know.
Nice.
You know, it's just.
I've got the powder blue one on today.
And it's lovely. Very lovely. All right, speaking of. See, are you going to unsee that? I don't care if it's a mental image or
not. Man. Oh,
God, I love this
show. Can't unsee.
There's some stuff you, even your imagination, that was too much. Okay.
Yes.
Spanish mackerel. Now, I'm one who absolutely loves eating Spanish mackerel. I think it's one of the best fish I've ever tasted under the right circumstances.
I think most people that don't like Spanish mackerel have had a problem with it, of either that it was not cleaned properly or frozen.
Now, to me, I go out, and if there's two people, I keep three Spanish mackerel. That's more than enough for a meal. Let all the rest of them go. It's not worth keeping them. If you got four people, obviously six. You know, your bag limit's really high, but it's stupid because it's senseless. And we don't want to waste anything. And if you keep more than two Spanish per person, you're wasting them. Now, excuse me, RJ, have you had fresh-caught Spanish mackerel?
No, and I think that's the problem why I don't like Spanish mackerel.
I probably
had it frozen and it's mushy. And you were right. You got to prepare certain fish correctly. It's like bluefish in New England. So a lot of people
there's a correct way of doing bluefish.
You got to cut the oil line out before you stick
it
on the grill.
I would say cut the oil line out. Put the fish back in the water, and then look at the oil line and go, well, that was nice, and throw that away.
But see, that's something that people think about Spanish mackerel, too, though.
That's absolutely true.
If you don't prepare it right, and I didn't know about Spanish mackerel being frozen until just now, but I've not liked it because it's a mushy fish.
It's mushy. It's oily.
I mean, you can buy it at Publix, and frozen fillets in Publix, and they're just not
what yeah, I
Yeah, you got to be a real hipster to like that stuff and eating it because it's cool and pretending you like it.
Yeah, exactly right.
That's the only, you know, these hipsters, you know, they're all artsy fartsy and, you know.
Using mom's credit card?
Yeah, you know, living in somebody's garage or basement using mom's credit card going, this is wonderful. But if you're going to go out, Spanish mackerel, going to tell you how to do it, and then we're going to tell you how to catch them. We go out first thing in the morning and catch the first three that we like, because it's me and Terry, so there's two of us. So we get three of them, and each one I catch them, I just put them in the ice chest. I don't bury them down in the ice, just put them on the ice. Now, the reason for putting them on the ice is, one, I am not I did not live in, you know, Taiwan or Nicaragua or one of these other countries where they don't use a lot of refrigeration on their fish. They're so used to eating them. They're used to the bacteria and stuff. It's like if you live in Mexico and you drink the water, you're fine. But if you're from the U.S., yeah, it's kind of like Bathroom City. You're just going to really get a tour of the bathroom. But with Spanish mackerel, I put them on ice to keep the bacteria down. All fish I want on ice. But with Spanish mackerel, if they die slowly as it gets cold, they just kind of go to sleep that way, and the body wants to suck the blood from the organ or from the tissue and get it to the organs in the brain. So that cold temperature draws that blood, draws that stuff out of the meat. You don't have to gut it. You don't have to cut its neck or nothing. Just put it on ice and let the cold temperature draw all that stuff out of the meat for you. Then when you get back to the house, they're a little stiff because they're cold, but I flay them out. And then one neat trick you have to know, there's a kind of a belly fin, and you got to kind of scoop around that. There's little bones that protrude into the meat from that belly fin that I always missed. Until I learned to cut a little scoop around that belly fin, I always had bones in my fillets, and I couldn't figure out where they were coming from. And one of the old-timers said, oh, they're right there in the belly fin. Boop, cut it. Awesome. So anyway.
That's something new for me. I didn't know that.
Yeah, you got to get that belly fin out. And, I mean, I go a half inch into it.
Right.
Make sure I get those bones. Because otherwise, taking the fillet, I get this beautiful fillet, and then all of a sudden I'm eating, I get these stupid little bones. They're always annoying. So, and I take butter, and I take McCormick lemon herb seasoning, H-E-R-B, herb. And I realize they don't function well. So, as you get it, I put the butter on, heat the grill up, butter side, butter it, lemon herb seasoning, put that side down. Before you flip it, more butter, more lemon herb, and flip it over on that, brown on both sides, done. Serve with your favorite accessories. By the time you eat, you know, you're going to want about three of those fillets. They're that good. You know, most of the time, you know, no. But with Spanish mackerel, yeah, you're going to eat a couple of them, even with the hush puppies and all the rest of that stuff. But how you catch them, you can see them. You can see the birds working over the top of them. But what kind of lures are we really using? Now, one of the things I got to say is probably the best over time. It used to be a head and jerk jigger. Years ago, this lure was invented for vertical jigging walleye in colder temperatures.
Really?
And, oh yeah, the head and jerk jigger, massive walleye lure, big in the 50s, 60s.
I guess I could see that.
Awesome walleye jig. And it started going around the world for different things, and people have done it and everything else. Well, nowadays, it's out. It's called Gotcha. And the Gotcha is really the exact same lure. They bought the rights from it. So here we've got old jerk jigger. It's called a Gotcha. It's kind of a metal tube with a lead head on it, and it's got kind of a sliced lead head. Now, Robert, what do you think about these for trolling?
I've trolled them a little bit, but I can't troll them very fast because then they want to blow out. I don't know why, but they want to just get real erratic. So I've found that trolling them slower at about 2 miles an hour has been the most ideal way, but I still run the ball bearing swivel on them, and it seems to keep them tracking a little bit better.
So the Gotcha to me was always a casting lure.
Oh, that's amazing for that.
I mean, that's one of the first lures you bought from me long before you started working there.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they're devastating for casting because they'll cast miles.
Now, you got to picture this. At that time, Robert was probably in his early mid-teens. He's got long blonde hair. He looks like right out of an 80s hair band. Usually no shirt. His hair is right about the top of his pants. He comes in. He's always looking for a lure and stuff. And he's going to go, what, to Elgin?
I think I was going to Elgin Bean that day. I can't remember.
Yeah.
But yeah, Elgin Bean was one of my more favorite places to fish.
And I got you the, it wasn't called a Gotcha back then. It was, I think it was still a Heading back then, but the Gotcha lure.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, I mean, for casting, the funny part was is that, you know, everyone knew it for catching Spanish mackerel, but I've caught snook. I've hooked redfish on it. I've had little mangrove snapper try eating it off my dock when I've been playing with it on the dock behind the house. You know, I've had a lot of customers catch so many other things on it, it's pretty surprising.
Now, how do you work it when you cast it?
I just reel it. You know, if I'm out on the beach, I'll actually jig it while reeling it, twitching my rod just slightly, you know, just to give it a little bit of an erratic motion. But the biggest thing is actually casting and just doing a fast retrieve for it.
You gotta, I'm showing RJ the lures, right? And I give him two lures so he could see it because I'm going to ask him about the lures. Well, I think he liked it. I got one lure back and some money.
Nice trade.
I remember these from when I was a kid. I haven't seen these in years.
Yep.
And we used to fish for striped bass with these.
Yeah.
And the neat thing was is it's got a shovel nose on it,
yep.
You know, and you would dig that in the sand. You would drag that along, and the little guy would go along making a sand thing behind him, and the striped bass would go nuts for these. And you would eventually lose them, you know, because we're kids. We didn't know about leaders. You know, you just tie it on, and the striper would cut it off. And you'd be devastated for the rest of the day, you know, that I lost my lure. But that's what I remember these for.
Because
it
really was.
I'm not even going to take it out of the box. I'm just going to stick it in my. But that when we were kids, this is what we fished for. That and then you had the silver reel that you used. But yeah, exactly right.
So
that's really cool. It's really cool to see these back on the market again.
Oh, they never left, at least in our store. Because I've always been a big fan of these. I carried them when they were Heading, and then there was a brief time between when Heading owned them and Sea Striker.
So who started the lure? Was it Heading?
Heading.
So that's what I remembered as. It would have been a Heading lure.
Jerk jigger. And I think it was in the 50s they came out. But I think Sea Striker owns it now. It's a subsidiary of one of our... Yeah, it's Sea Striker. And one of the largest distributors of tackle ended up buying this from, because it was sold from Heading. I can't remember who had it for a little while, and then ended up in Sea Striker. But Sea Striker's kept these alive and well. It's called a Gotcha, and it's the same lure. It literally comes from the same machine, same patents as the original one.
Except this one has a warning on it that I don't remember as a kid. It says, warning, this product contains a chemical known to the state of California to cause cancer and birth defects and other reproductive harm.
If I ever decide I'm going to come out with a line of tackle, I'm going to put on there illegal to sell in California.
Yeah, well, you're not supposed to eat these, so, you know.
Well, they're in California. This to them looks like candy. They eat the... They eat laundry detergent, for God's sakes, in California.
You're right.
Why wouldn't they eat a lure?
I cannot disagree with that.
You know, if they live in a city in California, I'm not including the exterior people who live in the countryside and who are some of the most amazing people I've ever had the pleasure to deal with. We're talking about the real citified Californians. I'm sure one of them would put some in that darn lure and try and smoke it. Well. You know, so... Anyway,
they'd probably get the cotton candy out that's behind the drywall and wrap it up in it to eat it.
Yeah. Go through the lead paint first, California. Yeah.
You heard that recipe first here on community radio.
So, anyway, God. Okay. Gotcha plugs are awesome. You control them because that flat face on them, it's got that bevel, wants to take it down. It wants to deflect the water, wants to swim side to side. You can get them with a single hook in the back and kind of Mylar treble hook in the front, two trebles. They come really little. And now the little one here, this is also one that I like throwing at Bonita and Blackfin Tuna. It's a G1001. It's the smaller one they make. But this little thing that's about an inch long, got a treble hook in the front and the back, but it's 5/8 of an ounce. That's pretty good weight for a little tiny bait. This little guy here is 5/8.
And it's aerodynamic. I mean, for as small as it is, it's going to cast a long ways with minimal effort.
And those Blackfin Tuna, the Bonita, the Spanish Mackerel, they get so keyed up on those little anchovies, the little glass minnows. They're just chewing up all these little tiny, tiny baits, and all of a sudden here's one goes darting right through the middle of them, boom, 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 bang, you got a fish on. And it just works. It's one of my favorite sizes, the tiny one. I do say I almost always carry the 3-inch, the 3/4, 1 ounce, but you know, that little one, I've caught just so many fish out deep in the Gulf of Mexico. What's really funny is I use a bigger one in the harbor than I do in the Gulf of Mexico. In the harbor, I use a standard gotcha, the 1 ounce, 3/4 ounce, where I can work that and just bang the Spanish mackerel up. But I get out deeper in the Gulf or even in the Atlantic, and I got the little short one, the 5/8 ounce, and I'm ripping the fish with it. It's pretty cool. Yeah. Now, spoons are another thing that we can or cannot, you know, they do a lot of trolling with them. But staying along more is a jerk jigger. I guess it's a jig, but it's kind of like a lure jig because it doesn't, it's got a beveled head on it. It's not like a standard jig, and it's not really a lure. It's kind of a class by itself lure. If I'm going to have to place it somewhere, I'm going to place it in jig. Because it's lead head, metal body, but
well, yeah, I can see, like you said, wasn't it originally invented for walleye fishing with the guys jigging with it? Because I mean, I have that one customer that does vertical jig with it out on the wrecks sometimes.
Right, it's a jig, yeah.
So
okay, that's maybe, a good point.
Maybe that's where it would be from.
Yeah,
it's definitely neat. I mean, I like it, and I don't care what color it is. I'm gonna throw them all. Some people want a specific color because they come in so many different color patterns.
All right, I got to get something in about the fishing here for just a minute. I hear there's still some good shark fishing out there, at least decent shark fishing.
Decent shark fishing. I think it's off a little bit because of the weather pattern and the water and stuff like that this year. But
we'll call it RT so we don't have to say it out loud.
It's it is what it is. You know,
he's over it.
I am. I'm over the drama of it. The place that's never been hit so far this year at all has been from basically lower Matlache Bridge, below Matlache Bridge, what's that, the Indian Fields?
Right.
From the Indian Fields all the way up to Burntstore, really hasn't seen any severe touches of it. I think they've gotten a few little minor bursts of it because of the way the tides flow in, but that area has been the only area where I've been hearing consistent reports of sharks from Burntstore down to Matlache.
Well, I wonder if a shark, because you figure a 5-6 foot bull shark, take a lot of red tide to kill it. I wonder if they go in and eat some of those dead fish and swim back out of it.
Yeah, I don't know.
It could be possible, because the first signs of red tide are dead mullet, second sign is dead catfish, and then all the other fish. Because when you have a red tide algae bloom, mullet actually like eating algae. They'll eat shrimp, fish, they'll eat worms, they'll eat just about anything. Mullet will eat anything there is, but it's got to be soft. But they do really like algae. And it's commonly thought that mullet swim into a red tide area. They just get kind of punch drunk on all this algae food there. They're just going along eating, 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 and then they die. And one thing about a catfish is they're all about the food. They go completely stupid. I mean, we're talking fat kid in a Dairy Queen. I mean, they can't stop themselves. And they go in to eat the dead mullet and all this other stuff that's dying, and then they die.
Yeah.
And those are the first two fish, always with a red tide. If somebody goes out, they tell me, oh, we got a bunch of fish, a lot of dead fish. What are they? First thing I want to know. If the first thing they see is mullet and then catfish, that's red tide. If there's a lot of other fish automatically dead, that's not red tide. That's something else. That's low oxygen. That's chemical spill. That's something else. Red tide is always easily distinguished for killing fish from those two fish first.
Yeah, they're kind of your canary in a coal mine kind of thing.
So, long-winded, it might be that those sharks down there are actually kind of going into a little bit of that red tide area, grabbing some dead fish and coming out.
Yeah, that would make sense.
Yeah, well, I just made it up on the spot. It just seemed like I was listening to that going, yeah. Well, you know, that area is right on the edge of the red tide. It did not get red tide.
Yeah.
But no. It was on the edge of it. There'd be a lot of dead fish coming in. It's prime food for those sharks.
Well, prime food, but it's also been prime safe haven for all the other fish that have moved from it. You know, whether it was the mullet, catfish, redfish, snook, trout, all that stuff has been down there all summer long. So it's been just a consistent food source.
All right. Jumping out into the Gulf of Mexico, because some pretty cool amberjack fishing out there. What do we got amberjack?
30 to 35 miles has been about the only couple of reports that I've gotten this week. A handful of guys have gone out, but amberjack gets a bad rap the way Spanish mackerel does. The guys like to catch them, but not as many people like to eat them. They like to smoke them. It's only good for smoking, and I'll argue that. But they've been getting them on the top water poppers like we were talking about last week. Some of the live blue runners, pinfish and squirrelfish. Just freelining them over some of the wrecks while the guys are either drifting them or bottom fishing for grouper and snapper at the same time. You know, the grouper and snapper bite, or the grouper bite out there, has been a little slow. They've been getting a few, but it hasn't been gangbusters. But the snapper bite and grunts and lane snappers still doing incredible from basically 50 foot of water to 120 feet of water.
Yeah, well, you know, and I'm going to just lay this out for you. If anybody's telling you the fishing is horrible, there's no fish and everything else, I got one thing to say to you. I'm thinking about doubling the size of Fish and Franks. We're literally thinking about expanding to almost twice our size. And we get a lot of calls about, you know, can you put a bait shop here, a bait shop there, and I don't know. But really, we're looking at almost doubling the size of the store. So if I thought the fishing was going to be bad and there was going to be no fish, and would I even be considering it?
No. No.
I mean, I'm nuts, but I'm probably not stupid. I'm insane.
I'll vote for that.
Insensitive, yep. Egotistical, arrogant. You know, we get probably severe mental and personality issues, but I'm not stupid. I would not even consider doubling the size of my store if it wasn't going to be good. I'm telling you, I got good feelings. So anyway, amberjack out there. Now, you're really talking 30, 40 miles out, or is there any even closer?
That's the only places I've heard of them is that, you know. And every now and then they do move in closer to, like, the Palm Island Ferry or the School Bus Reef, which is 50, 60 feet of water, but it's not a common occurrence. Most of the time it's 80 foot plus.
All right, now, grunts, snappers, if I want dinner, I got family coming into town, I need to feed the masses here. How far out do I got to go to get a good dinner?
7 to 10 miles.
Really?
Yeah. 7 miles is fine, you know, that 35 feet of water, 30 feet of water. They're so getting them out there, but really that
inside of land.
Yeah.
And what do you got for bait?
Squid. Live shrimp, frozen shrimp if you can get it, and then basically cut pieces of bait fish, you know, whether it's cut mullet, cut sardines. One guy took the small frozen greenbacks the other day, and he was using pieces of that out there. And they're doing just fine. Plus, a lot of guys have been starting to really use that fish bites. And fish bites has really gotten very popular with these guys grocery shopping on these near shore reefs.
Made in St. Augustine, developed in St. Augustine. It's a Florida product. It works great. You got to love fish bites. We're waiting for our next shipment to come in. We're thinking about expanding the store. We really got stupid and ordered a lot of fish bites. So, boy, when this comes in, you're going to have a great selection of this stuff. It is awesome. I've been using it God, as long as you've been coming in the store, I've had fish bites in the store.
Oh, yeah.
So fish bites is one of those, and perfect with what you have in your hand there, Master Robert.
Oh, bucktail.
Well, the nice part about it is fish bites can legally be put on that jig and catch a lot more fish with it.
Yeah, you can fish for grouper and snapper with this thing, with the fish bites on it, because the fish bites is not a natural bait, and even though it has the scent enhancers in it and the enzymes, but it's still technically not a real bait.
Why would it be illegal to put squid on there?
Because it's a J-hook on a bucktail. All pretty much, I don't know of any bucktails that don't have a J-hook on them, so a lot of people don't realize when they go out there and they start using a bucktail to jig for snapper, and especially grouper, and they put squid or sardine or something on it, technically they're breaking the law.
No, literally they're breaking the law.
Yeah.
That's not a technical, not a technicality. In today's world, you got to use circle hooks to bottom fish in the Gulf of Mexico or down the Keys or wherever you're going. So if you have to use circle hooks, any time you're using natural bait, could
correct,
be live or dead, but squid, fish, whatever, that's natural bait. You cannot put to bottom fish in the Gulf of Mexico any type of natural bait on a J-hook, and jigs have J-hooks.
Yep.
None of them come with circle hooks.
Yep.
So these big bucktails, guys put a lot of those curl tails on there, you know, the big 6-inch gulps, the big soft plastic tails and all that. But a lot of guys take and put like a sardine on the back of it to drop it down right through the eyes or the lips. They'll take a squid and cut it lengthways, even put a whole squid on there, drop it down. And those are guys breaking the law. Now, are they doing anything bad? I don't think so. But are they breaking the law? Yes.
Yes.
But if you use fish bites, you can get away with putting some great scent on there, pick of several different colors. And if I'm using a 1-ounce jig, I've got about a 3-inch, 4-inch strip on there. But I've got a 6 or an 8-ounce jig. I've actually got a, you know, I never thought of it, but I'm probably going with ounce and inches for the strip.
Yeah, there you go.
But with the 1 ounce, I'm still using a 2 or 3 inch strip. But a 6-8 ounce jig, I mean, I'm going to start with about a 3-inch strip no matter what. But on that 6-8 ounce, I'm literally using 6-inch plus pieces of that fish bites on there.
Yeah.
It comes in a long strip, and that's what I think it comes in different things.
You can buy it in strips, or you can buy it in pre-cut pieces, or even little sheets. You know, the ones we primarily carry are the strips, so that way people can pick and choose what they want to do. Gives them the options.
Okay, so let's see. One of the weird ones that I would not expect to be around right now is pompano.
Right.
Pompano, this is nuts. I mean, we're hearing about pompano, Hog Island, the Two Pines, Burnt Store, Cape Hayes. Is there any place you haven't heard of pompano in the harbor right now?
No, not really. Well, yeah, pretty much the upper end of the harbor, like from Hoare Point up to the 41 Bridge. I haven't heard of any there.
The area around Punta Gorda and Port Charlotte proper.
Right.
But
basically
literally
the headwaters of the Peace River.
The headwaters of the Peace River. I wonder what's different, because the mouth of the Maca River has got plenty of pompano going in and out of it. But the mouth of the Peace River doesn't.
Yeah, I don't know why.
I didn't think about that till literally just this minute. But
me
for
neither.
The last few years, the sandbar along the west side going up, the sandbars on the outside of Hog Island have all been good on pompano.
Right.
The schools come in, they go out. But you never hear about it at Bayshore Pier or Fisherman's Village or places like that.
No. No, and the bottom's really not significantly different there than it is over at Hog Island.
Well, the bottom at Hog Island is pretty severely different. Just sand, a lot of nice, pretty sand, pretty shallow water. That area of Hog Island is very different. Now, the only place that would be similar is Grassy Point. Grassy Point would be very similar. The area right next to Ponce Park would be very similar from Colony Point around to Ponce Park.
Right.
But literally, once you're inside a Colony Point, I think drastically different.
Right.
But any good ideas on tips for catching those pompano?
Well, a couple people have been out that have been fishing them pretty steady this week, have been doing really good up until the last 2 days. and they said they're seeing a few fish, but they haven't been cooperating. But one gentleman went out twice yesterday. Went out in the morning, didn't do very good. Went out in the afternoon when that tide really started moving, and got into them chewing. The tides for the last 2 days in the early mornings have been a little bit slower moving tides, so his theory was that they just wanted faster moving water, which would coincide with more oxygen and just a little bit more comfortable for the fish.
Cool. So there's actually been quite a bit of fishing around. And, yeah, I got to tell you, Fish and Frank's looking at expanding. And this may happen. I mean, it's getting real close. But in the meantime, Fish and Frank here, Robert in the chair across from me, and our commander, RJ, in the control booth. Houston, we have liftoff. Let us go, RJ. Take us out of here. We'll see you guys in the next one. Just to ease my mind.